Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. My name is Kieran Tavem, and once again I'm joined by my good friend out in the United States, JJ Duke. JJ, how you doing, pal?
Good. It's always good to be on the show, let's put it that way, because there's plenty of big matches to talk about.
Absolutely, and also it's worth mentioning that we are recording this show on Memorial Day out in the United States, and I think it's always important to recognise and remember those who fought for whoever's country it might be, for the military. And I'm sure that you would like to take potentially this opportunity to send a little message out there, mate, to the US.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always humbling to hear the stories of those who risk their lives to protect, at least for our country, our way of living and how we go about our business. And always very thankful for what those folks do, because, you know, they are the ones that we need to admire and have to admire. And I think they're, you know, this is their day. So we should not only remember them, but remember those who have lost their lives defending our country as well.
Absolutely. Well said. Well said. Well, on this episode of Women's Soccer Zone, we are going to have a look at the UEFA Women's Champions League. Of course, it was played out in Reggio Emilia in Italy last week and was won by Lyon, an historic victory for Lyon, winning their third Women's Champions League title. So JJ and I are going to have a little bit of a chat about that. But we also have Anthony Resch from Footdel, who gives us a bit of insight from the French perspective, what the reaction was. And of course, what the lasting legacy is of the three players that are departing Lyon: Louise Nassib, Amandine Henry, Lotte Schelin, all played their last game for Lyon last week. So he gives us a bit of insight into the impact that they've had out in France during their time. We'll also have a look at the FA Women's Super League, very, very tight between Man City and Chelsea at the moment. And we will also have a chat about the NWSL, because it's very, very interesting over in JJ's part of the world. So after this break, we will commence by talking about the UEFA Women's Champions League.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So, welcome back. UEFA Women's Champions League, JJ. Last Thursday, Reggio Emilia, I was out there. I saw it. I know you've seen it. Lyon, third historic Women's Champions League title, went down to the death, went down to penalties. Saki Kumagai showing her mental strength by scoring yet another decisive spot kick. She did the same in the 2011 World Cup for Japan when they defeated the United States. What did you make of the game, and how impressed were you with Lyon's performance in claiming their third title?
Well, you know, it just kind of caps off really what this current dynasty, you can almost go ahead and say, for Lyon, because it seems like every year they're a team that's built to play in this match, and they get themselves to this match and they don't disappoint. You and I, though, were talking prior to recording the show about it is interesting how Lyon can go through an entire year. They bag, what, 5, 6, 7 goals a match. They show up in the big ones when it matters. We saw that in their semifinal against PSG, where they won, what, 7-0 in their first leg. But they were wasteful in their chances, to not to be, you know, criticizing or anything, but you just look at some of the opportunities that they had. They could have put this match away very early. They let Wolfsburg hang around, and fair play to them. They scored, they forced the extra time, but it was class that prevailed in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think it's critical. I just think it's being honest. They were wasteful. They had opportunities. It should never have gone, in my view, to extra time and penalties. They had the opportunities to win the game earlier on. But the longer they went without adding that crucial second goal, you always felt that the Wolfsburg had a chance of coming back. What interested me beforehand was when the team sheets came out and the way that Lyon lined up. They put Amandine Henry as a centre-back in a back three, and Saki Kumagai as a holding midfielder. And I will say, I thought Saki Kumagai was absolutely immense in that game. I know she was named player of the match, not just for that winning spot kick, but she was quality all the way through defending that back three. I thought Paulina Bremer on the right wing was impressive as well. But the way they lined up really surprised me. You had Isabel Koszowski playing at left back, and she got absolutely roasted by Bremer, left, right and centre. That was a surprise for me, the way that the two teams lined up, and maybe that was a sign of the respect that they have for each other.
No, you're right. And I think, again, you can look up and down the roster of both of these teams, maybe more so for Lyon, if anything. And it's always a question of how do you keep your players happy? Because you have a lot of superstars. You have to put 18 out there, at least on a team sheet. No, you're right. It was surprising a little bit. But end of the day, the result is there. So whatever happened, it could have been a lot worse than it had been. But it was interesting, I'll give you that.
Yeah, I think the key thing for me was Wolfsburg were able to kind of find that extra bit in the last 10-15 minutes. As I said, I think the longer Lyon went without scoring that crucial second goal, Wolfsburg were always going to have a few chances, and those chances came in the last 10 minutes. And then, for me, extra time, I'm quite happy to say it, extra time was more entertaining than the previous 90 minutes.
No, you're right, and I think, you know, carrying on that momentum, Pop had her second chance just moments after the restart in the first period of extra time. Think about if she scored on that one.
She should have scored,
and that could have changed the complexion, because you'd have had to figure then the standard Lyon would throw everything forward. Wolfsburg, who had sat back for a while, they still had one sub to use in that extra time, which is always, you have to wonder about it. How does a coach, a manager go about those extra 30 minutes? Do they keep one sub in the pocket just in case? Do they use it? They kept in the pocket. Blasa came in. Pop, I think, should have scored that one, because then they could have sat back a little bit, got that one extra fresh leg on for the second period, absorbed, hit on the counterattack, and this could have been a very different story, but they didn't. Lyon didn't capitalize either, but, you know, again, you're right in saying it was entertaining. I felt, though, again, throughout the 90 minutes, it was pretty good play as a whole. Did kind of fade off a little bit in probably about minutes 60 to 70 or so, but then Wolfsburg, they had to throw caution in the wind. They had to take chances. They got theirs, and they forced the penalties, which really at the end of the day it's a lottery.
Yeah, absolutely. And surprising to see Ada Hegerberg miss the opening spot kick for Lyon. She obviously was the player that got Lyon that dream start inside 12 minutes, and you would have bet your house on her bagging her penalty. And I had managed to speak to her after the game, and we'll hear from her in a second. And she described the feeling of feeling pissed when she missed that penalty, because she said to me that it would have been the worst thing in the world if they'd lost that game on spot kicks because of her miss. But I think for most people, when she missed that, you had to make Wolfsburg favourites, not just because they would have the upper hand straight away, but how often do we ever see the Germans lose a penalty shootout?
Yeah, not often, if ever at all. But, you know, again, this is club football, not international football. So you have to credit Buadi for making that one big stop that she needed to late on. You have to wonder, though, and I know this brought some commentary on social media, and this is speaking as a keeper in my former life. They always say that it's a guessing game. It really isn't. To an extent, you can try and read the body language, but Schultz just froze on that last spot kick. I was thinking that, okay, you know, Kumagai, you could figure, we've seen at least her a couple attempts before in past major tournaments. Maybe there have been some notes passed along, but yikes.
Well, I wonder if she was thrown a little bit, because when I was sat in the press box in Reggio, when you looked at the run-up that Saki Kumagai takes, she was at least 5 yards outside of the penalty area. Now, that is a hell of a run-up. So I'm wondering if Ahmet Schultz just wasn't expecting that. Maybe she hadn't done her homework, and maybe she wasn't aware that Saki Kumagai was going to make a big run-up like that, and it maybe threw her a little bit. And Kumagai said in the press conference afterwards that, "I always take those long run-ups because it gives me the opportunity to see what the keeper's going to do." So where you were saying about keepers can read the body language of a player taking the kick, Saki Kumagai takes a long run up because it gives her maybe an advantage, because she can see what the keeper's going to do, because she has that little bit of extra time with the longer run up.
No, okay, that's a fair kind of retract, if you will, because yeah, if you are a goalie, you're trying to you pick a spot. I mean, like for me, I always went to my right. You know, that's you know, one of the things I always do that just felt like my stronger side. It felt when Buhadi was attempting her saves for Lyon, it was to her left, okay. But then Schult just, it looked like she wanted to go to her left. But Kumagai, in that long run-up, if you're a goalie, you're thinking, usually it's a long run-up, you're getting a shot blasted at you. Usually that comes right down the middle or just off to the right of center or left of center. But she kind of passed it into the back of the net, or at least not so much really went, you know, full throttle trying to drive it through the net. But, yeah, it just, it's one of those things where I guess, like, they kind of almost say in the sport of baseball here, if you're going down, you might as well go down swinging. Didn't really feel that.
No, not at all. I love that saying. It's something that we use over here as well. Not as often as you guys, but definitely is a reference to baseball. But Lyon did win. It was their third title. It's the most Women's Champions League titles that's been won by any club. It was a special and emotional game for the Lyon players because they will be losing three of their biggest players over the last 8-9 years. Lotte Schelling, Louise Nassib and Amandine Henry. Louise Nassib and Amandine Henry both started the game. Lotte Schelling came on with about 12 minutes of normal time left, which, as you said earlier, shows the depth in that team when you can leave a player of Schelling's quality on the bench. Now, I'm speaking to Anthony Resch from Footdale shortly about the impact those three players have had on Lyon and on French football. But I guess one question I'd ask is the perception of those three players maybe outside of Europe. What's the American perception? We know many people will know about Amandine Henry because of the performances she had at the World Cup last year, but more so the fact that she's going to be joining the Portland Thorns. But if I asked you the question, the views of American supporters maybe on Schelling and Nassib, what would the reaction be, do you think?
Well, I think in general, if you have three major players from a club leaving that club, all going relatively different directions, one leaving the continent, one going back home, and one saying that she could be very well done from football in a couple of months, that it's not a changing of the guard. It's not one of those things where, you know, to say that, okay, well, let's try something different because we don't have anything else to lose. But it's, I think for me, you look at Lyon and you look at the status of French club football, where's the challenge? And we talked about this in prior shows that there really isn't a challenge right now. If you're a top player, male or female, you want to go where the best opportunity is for you to play competitively and for you to grow. And for some of those players, when they only play in maybe four big matches a year, that almost kind of stunts development. Now, granted, they're practicing day in and day out with the best club in the world on the women's level. I think there's little question about that. But how much, you know, practice can translate over into when you're beating a side 11-0? Coming on the weekend, you know, what motivation do you have? So I think maybe that might be a little notion. It's not going to be something that's going to matriculate quickly, but if we still see a couple of years from now that teams in France aren't coming up and stepping up, maybe spending a little bit of money trying to challenge Lyon, then you might see a few more players decide, well, okay, it's not working here, where do I go next to better myself, to make myself, you know, a contender in a national team and, you know, potentially, you know, further things going in big competitions.
Yeah, no, completely agree. Well, I was very fortunate to be able to talk to one of those players that was leaving, Lotte Schelling. She was inundated with media questions. She probably spent a good 15-20 minutes speaking to various media in different languages before she got to me. It's left with a very difficult situation, JJ. I don't know if you've ever been in this position before. I put it out on Twitter that I'm sure journalists and writers have a list of players that they'd really like to interview. Lotte Schelling has been on mine for quite a while, but as has Camille Abelli. Now, Camille and Schelling were both stood next to each other doing media, and I had the very difficult scenario of having to choose which one to speak to, because I knew that whichever one I chose, the other one was going to walk past and head into the bus because I was one of the last media on the mix zone. So I had to make the choice. I chose Schelling, And here she is, as well as Edda Hegerberg, who of course scored the goal in the opening 10 minutes, 11 minutes. And she spoke to me about her experience of winning her very first Champions League title. So here they are. Lotta, you've got the trophy in your hand, having played your last game. Emotions you're going through at the moment?
It's so crazy, and I never ever felt something like this, because it was really special to, you know, the penalty kicks and everything. It's really special when you win something like that, because you know that it can go either way. So crazy, a lot of emotions, and of course afterwards everything hit me, and a lot of tears, and happy, and a lot of hugs, and I don't know.
I mean, an incredible career, 41 Champions League goals for single club, which is a record. I mean, describe what it's like, this club, and how much you're going to miss it.
Oh, this club is so amazing. You know, you can just see it on what we achieved the last couple of years. You know, it says everything, and we have a president who's amazing and who gives us all the possibilities for, you know, to be as good as this, and it's really real, you know, and it's like a big family, and it's just gonna keep on going. But I'm so happy that I got this 8 years together with them, and to be able to live this, because it's rare, and it's something that I really, really treasure with.
What's the secret to that togetherness? I spoke to Edda Hegerberg last week, and she said that there's just this real togetherness that exists. What's the secret to that? So many nationalities, but all seem to get on incredibly well.
First of all, we play well and we win. You know, that's a secret. You know, when you win, the group gets tighter and tighter. And afterwards, we have a lot of good people in the team and around the team. And you know that makes us you know, want to go further and further and further. And this year, what can you say? You know. 3 titles, it's amazing, so I'm so happy.
So last week you said to me this would be the biggest achievement of your career if it happened. Now that it's happened, how does it feel?
It's probably the biggest day of my life. I really can't describe what I feel right now. I'm so proud to be a part of this, and it's fully deserved.
And to score in a final as well, so early on. Tell me what it was like when the ball hit the back of the net.
No, you know, a lot of things goes through your head. I was like only focused on doing a good job after the goal, or get back into the game, because we know that the German won't give up, and they didn't score a goal in us 2 minutes before the end, and that's always hard, but we turned back.
I have to ask, because you're a winner now, so you can't forget about it, but when you split up the penalty and it's saved.
I had a lot of question mark, no worries at all.
No worries. What's your head after that?
We won. You know, what doesn't go through your head, to be honest. I was so pissed, because obviously we control the whole game, and if we lose some penalties today, it will be the worst thing ever. But the girls did a job, and I'm so proud of being a part of this. It's amazing.
We spoke first 3 years ago when you were a young player at Tabina Potsdam, still a young player. Could you imagine standing here when you were there 3 years ago?
You know, I dreamt about it every day in training. But to actually do it, it takes a lot of courage, training, mental work. So being here today, it's amazing, because it shows that hard work gives you results. And obviously, I'm really motivated for continuing working hard.
Speak about the mentality of Saki Kumagai. Scored the winning penalty at the World Cup final in 2011, and then steps up today. I saw her go for that long run up, and I thought,
you know,
blimey.
You know, that's the strength in this team. We got so many different mentalities in one team, and it creates such a good group. Saki, I have no words about her mentality. She's calm as a fish, to be honest. So, no, she's amazing.
How are you going to celebrate?
We're going back to Lyon right now with the families, and then we're going 2 days to Saint-Tropez with the president. So I think we're going to have a good finish of the season.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So that was Lotta Schellin and Edda Hegerberg. JJ, before we move on, as I said, we've spoken about the impact that Nasib Omri and Schellin have had on French football and maybe the perceptions outside of France. But as I said, I wanted to get someone from within the country who maybe has a bit more of a knowledge than we do. So I spoke to Anthony Resch, who's the manager of the popular Footdel organisation out in France. You can follow Footdel on @Footdel, which is FOOTDELLES. So I had a chat with him about the Champions League and, of course, the impact of those three players on French football and Lyon. So here he is. Okay, so I'm joined by my good friends at Footdel, and I'm joined by their manager, Anthony Resch, out in France to talk a little bit about the Women's Champions League final, but also the impact that the three players leaving the club have had on French football. Of course, Amandine Henry, Louisa Nassib and Lotte Schelling. Anthony, thank you for joining me. First off, what's the reaction been in France after Lyon won their third Women's Champions League title?
After this victory, do you know the newspaper L'Équipe?
We know L'Équipe, yep.
Yeah, in France, the first page spoke about Olympique Lyonnais. And it's very, very special in our country because L'Équipe doesn't speak about women's soccer very much. And when I read L'Équipe, I was amazing by this article. And in Twitter, in our website, in Footdel, there were many reactions. Congratulations by fans. Congratulations by many journalists, French journalists. Specialized in this sport, and all this thing show this victory is great because it's historic. Three titles in the Champions League for a French club, French team is historic, and Olympique Lyonnais now. Is the second club, second team in Europe after Frankfurt. This final was looked by 4 billion French on TV.
I'm pretty certain that'll be 4 million. That's translation, but that's fine. 4 million people. I saw the statistic. That is a lot of people indeed. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to assume that you watched the game. I know you were unable to make it out to Reggio, but Lyon really did dominate the game, but ended up being taken to penalties. How much did that surprise you, seeing how well they played, but seeing that they couldn't finish Wolfsburg off in normal time?
I was not surprising by a penalty because even if Lyon has dominated the final, during the last 5-10 minutes, I had the feeling Wolfsburg could score, and on this goal of Wolfsburg, Sarah Boady has not did a great move on the air.
No, that's correct. I completely agree with you. She,
I was not surprising by the score, by the penalties, but in France, a lot of people, a lot of journalists, particularly specialized in women's soccer news, before the final, said Lyon will win. It was. No more. It was casual to Lyon wins but this final.
Okay. Yeah, no, I agree. I think for me, when I was asked beforehand, I also thought Lyon would probably edge it. I think I thought they might edge it by maybe one goal in normal time. But as you say, historic title for them. Yeah. They now have to try and look ahead to next season. We know that through reading your website and other news outlets that they are going to be losing three high-profile players in the players we mentioned earlier, Nassib, Schelling and Henry. They've tried to counter that by making some high-profile signings. Jennifer Marajan has come in from Frankfurt. They've also signed Kira Hamroui, Jessica Huara, and Caroline Sager from Paris Saint-Germain. But yeah. Talk to me about the three players that are leaving, and talk to me about the impact that they've had for Lyon, but also the impact they've had on women's football in France.
To my mind, Amandine Henry, Louise Anessib, and Lota Schelling were three of best players in the history of this team. First of all, Lota Schelling has scored 225 goals for this club, and it's amazing. 225 goals. I'm thinking that was not realized before her. And moreover, Lota Schelling is a great striker by her moves on field, her goals, obviously, but moreover, by her state of mind. She is a great person. She is lovely. For Amandine Henry in France is considered by the best player in our country, even if journalists, fans are used to speak about principally Louise Anessib, Eugénie Le Sommer, Wendy Renard, but we mustn't forget Amandine Henry, because his impact on the game, his impact on midfield is very, very special. She has big qualities, physical, mentally. She's the perfect player, the player of the future, if I may say so.
You may say so, because I agree. But please carry on.
Yeah. Amandine Henry certainly will create a lack of in midfield of Olympique Lyonnais the next season, because even if Caroline Seger has come, she's not the same player. But I like Caroline Seger. I am thinking Seger is a great player in Europe during her working for PSG. She has perfect, but Amandine Henry is best.
Agreed. And how about Louise Anessib?
Yes, Louise Anessib. It's special in France. Many journalists, many fans like the player, but we prefer the player at the person. Louise Anessib gets a great talent. We agree with that. But in a group, she is special. She needs moments for her and not for the group. It's special. You know, I am speaking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And but on the field, Louise Anessib has brought great things, great moves, great goal for Olympique Lyonnais, and she has participated to many titles in France. These three Champions League she has won, these three Champions League with Lyon, and even if she has stopped her career after Olympic Games, her career has been very, very, very great.
Agreed, completely. I remember Louisa tearing England apart at the European Championships in 2013, something that sticks with me because I was in the stadium thinking, well, this is a special, special player. I'd seen her do many things like that before, but she was very good in that game.
I can say you a short history. When I went to United States in March for She Believes Cup, in the stadiums in Nashville, Tampa Bay, or Miami, many fans wear the T-shirt of Luisa Nesib. Many Americans. And it was amazing because I didn't think Luisa Nesib was so much popular in the United States. And this history shows the impact of Luisa Nesib on women's soccer.
Completely. And I think Amandine Henri is going to have a similar impact, obviously, going over to the United States. I think the fans, particularly of the Portland Thorns, are very excited about her arrival. I guess my final question, Anthony, actually relates to some comments that the president of Lyon made. Jean-Michel Aulas has come out in the media and stated that he wants to try and attract some players from the United States, Alex Morgan being one of them. Mm-hmm. As far as the French media are concerned, as far as you're concerned, how realistic is that? Is that something that could happen, or is that Aulas trying to build up interest, but there's not necessarily something that could happen? Do you think it could happen, that he could be bringing in players from America?
Three or four days ago, I read a short article where Jean-Michel Aulas said he thought Alex Morgan didn't go in Olympique Lyonnais because the personal situation of Alex Morgan is very complicated. Do you know her husband plays for
Orlando?
In the United States, and I'm thinking the offer is complicated because about financial subject. Alex Morgan is a great player. Her value is a lot of billion, no?
lots of money. Billion.
I'm thinking Jean-Michel Aulas has given up about this offer, this transfer.
Do you see any other Americans that he might, not necessarily naming any names, but do you think he might go to America and try and attract some of those players?
For Lyon, I know just the name of Alex Morgan, but nowadays in Lyon, after Caroline Seger, Jessica Wara, Keira Amraoui, Kenza Dali, players of Paris Saint-Germain, I'm thinking that that Lyon has finished its transfer for the next season.
Okay.
Maybe another player, but I don't get some news about that.
Okay. Well, you're probably right, and I think the players they've brought in certainly fit pieces of the puzzle that will be missing next year. Marijan, probably for Nesib. You're looking at Caroline Seger replacing Amandine Henri and Kira Hamroui, and Jessica Iwata will certainly add some depth to that. Anthony, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a real pleasure, and let's have you back on the show very soon. Plenty to talk about in French football, so we'll get you on again.
Thank you too.
Women's Soccer Zone. Listen to the show on Audioboom or download via iTunes. Just search for Women's Soccer Zone.
So big thanks there to Anthony and, of course, to Ada and Lotta previously. JJ, we move on to the FAWSL. Now, I know that it's very difficult for you to follow, but I know that you do your best based on social media and maybe the odd stream that you might be able to get hold of. We won't say whether they're legal or illegal. But it's very tight at the top. Man City and Chelsea continue to lead the way. But maybe whereas last time we spoke there, they both had 100% records, they've both now dropped points. Chelsea, of course, lost at home to Manchester City a couple of weeks ago. And then City went and dropped points away at Liverpool in a 0-0 draw. We now go into a mid-season break, if you like. There's a month between the last fixtures and the next ones happening. So what's your perceptions at the moment from what you've been able to follow?
Well, you know, I think for me, first you talk about Chelsea, and it's almost kind of that FA Cup hangover, if you will. You play in one of the biggest matches of the season in front of one of the biggest crowds that you have. You put everything you can. You lose to your cross city and longtime rival, Arsenal. That's demoralizing in the sense that, you know, you're trying to defend your title. You're trying to win, keep the trophy that you've worked so hard to hang on to. Didn't happen. Okay, then, by the way, you're going to go play the league leaders who have yet to concede a goal in seven games, or, well, through seven games right now. That's a tough ask. Even though it was at home, it was really City that were the best. I think what So-Yeon-ji had the best chance off the underside of the crossbar. Might have been to get one back, but it was City through and through that really looked strong. But then, what, a week after that, a week plus after that, they go up to Liverpool, who's they're in change right now. As we all know, they've lost their manager. They've lost more than half of their team. But all of a sudden, Liverpool are fourth, despite giving up the most goals in the league, which is pretty impressive. And then to put on a performance defensively that they did against City, Shabon Chamberlain was very strong in that match. They didn't create a whole lot of chances, really, to say that they deserved anything more than a point, but a point deserved nonetheless.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I have to give a shout-out for Siobhan Chamberlain, because it's good to see her playing first-team football. The last year, especially, she was not playing a lot of football, having been second fiddle to Emma Byrne. And then, in fact, it's the last 2 years, because the year before last, she was playing back up to Emma Byrne. Then last year, it was back up to Emma Byrne. And Sari van Veenendaal made the loan move over to Notts County and didn't really get a lot of minutes there because Carly Telford's form was so good. So it is really, really good to see Siobhan playing again and doing well. And yeah, you're absolutely right. City and Chelsea, have to give a credit to City to go, seven games without conceding a single goal. That is impressive, because they are a team that have focused very much on making maybe the first 11 very strong and having maybe two or three that they can bring in if need be. But there is not a lot of depth in that squad. And that was highlighted when they lost players like Izzy Christensen at the start of the season, who's just coming back now. Tony Duggan's had a spell out injured as well. She's now back. And they've managed that. They've managed the losing those players. And they have really, really set the standard. And Chelsea, they will not give up at all, because they have a game in hand. If they win that game in hand, it puts them a point behind City. So it's very much, in my view, a race between those two. And I don't really see anyone else challenging. But I do have to give credit to Birmingham City, ladies, because I myself, and I know I love a lot of other journalists, tip them, along with Liverpool, to really struggle. And when I spoke to their defender, Aoife Mannion, at the start of the season, she said, do you know what? People tipping us to get relegated, it's probably not unfair, because we haven't made a huge number of signings. We haven't been able to strengthen. We've lost Karen Carney, and yet they find themselves in third place of 11 points. I mean, I look at them and they have been the surprise of the season so far.
Oh, that they have. But here's the thing that stands out to me right now, Kieran. Their last three matches, unbeaten, two wins and a draw. But they've only scored two goals in those three matches. They've only scored four goals in seven, but have only conceded four. So clearly something is working in the defensive scheme of things, but where are the goals coming from? Because we all know throughout the course of the season, you're eventually going to be exposed in some portion of your game, and it's up to you to figure it out. Now, granted, we're almost at the halfway point of the season, but someone's going to catch them, because four goals isn't going to get the job done. With goal difference, of course, being that, you know, tiebreaker. Say they're at, you know, around this third, fourth position come August, and there's going to be the likes of Liverpool and Arsenal that are going to chase them down. They're going to need to find a way to hit the back of the net on more than a couple of occasions, or they're going to find themselves middle third, maybe even bottom third.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, you say where are the goals going to come from? They're actually looking like they're trying to address that, because last week they actually sign forward Isabel Linden from FFC Frankfurt. Now, Isabel has played much of her career in the national team through the youth ranks. I think she's maybe got one or two caps for the main national team. But Isabel coming in, big team in Frankfurt, leaving them. We know that Frankfurt are a team that are losing players left, right and centre, and I do wonder what's going to happen to them next season. But looks like Dave Parker's certainly trying to address that, because Isabel will no doubt add competition. Birmingham struggled for goals last season as well. So if she can come in and hit the ground running, that could be really, really important for them. I mean, looking down the table, mate, it's Doncaster kind of bringing it up from the bottom, pointless at the moment, obviously suffering from the loss of Courtney Sweetman-Kirk at the beginning of the season to that serious broken leg. She's out for the season, but it's still early days. It's the first half of the season, but this league is so short. If you find yourself playing catch up, it's very difficult to make up the ground on the teams above you.
Well, it's a natural home and home. So in a league that has now 9, was 8, that's a 16 match season, you don't have a whole lot of time. If you slip up once, you can maybe make up ground. Twice, forget about it. You're basically done.
No. It's as blunt as that, but it's as true as that. So Doncaster will probably definitely need to start winning some games, but they've got the quality in that squad. They've lost Courtney, absolutely, but they still have plenty of experience with the likes of Tash Dowie in that side. They do have goals in them. They just need to start getting some consistency.
And also playing matches, by the way. Am I looking at this right, Kieran, and seeing that they've only played 3 times this year in the league?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. 3 games. A couple of postponements I think they've suffered. I think they had a postponement against Arsenal. They were supposed to play Arsenal last week. Arsenal travelled all the way up. Massive downpour came just before kickoff, and it was postponed half an hour before they were due to kick off. And they also have had another postponement as well. I can't remember where that was. But yeah, only the 3 games. So they're not only going to have games in hand, but there's also the possibility of a bit of fixture congestion in that second half of the season. So you're right, they need games. And the problem with the scheduling of this league, it's very stop-start. So how it's going to work out for Doncaster, I'm not too sure. But yeah, need to start winning games, but for them, need to start playing games as well. So we'll have to see how that one goes. Before we move on to the NWSL, JJ, it might be worth doing something that links both the WSL and the NWSL, and that was the friendly that took place last week between Seattle Reign and Arsenal Ladies. Now, I haven't had a chance to catch up on the game at the moment because I was out in Reggio Emilia for the Champions League when that game was going on. But I know you've seen it, and I know you were quite keen to talk about it, because obviously we don't get to see English clubs coming up against American clubs, well, ever.
Yeah, this is the first time. And, you know, I took away a few things from this, Kieran. First off, you know, we've been talking about for years now what players want to do. We know that Manchester City has the money, Chelsea has the money, Arsenal has the money, and a couple other clubs have the money as well. American players may be thinking, okay, well, if it's about time after this year, if I want to start making some money, do I go over there? Okay, well, we learned one thing. There is a definite clash of styles between these two leagues, as we saw from this match. Now, granted, of course, this is just one 90-minute sample size, where especially Seattle Reign played that entire second half with reserves and call-ups for that match, as opposed to Arsenal, who brought a pretty deep bench. You know, you could see a lot of those players. Van Veenendaal was the keeper in the second half. She would start at least probably half of the matches for Arsenal at some point during the season. But you see where Seattle, as a representative of the league, you know, they do traditionally build out of the back and then try to push on forward. They were pressured very highly for the first 15 minutes by Arsenal, force Hope Solo into some very questionable clearances. But then on the other side, when Seattle were able to possess through the midfield, Arsenal were beat on multiple occasions by playing a very high back line, maybe because they like to press so high up the field, and that's where Seattle really exploited them. So you saw that kind of a clash of personalities and styles of play. Second off, it's a good showcase for both of these leagues to have. Again, with both leagues playing a very similar calendar season, you'd almost kind of wish that there was a bit more. Maybe preseason. Why don't you have a mixture of teams from both leagues go to one location and have a week-long, you know, pseudo tournament or something like that, just to expose the game. And the third thing that I read, at least I saw on social media, was for the fact that a lot of folks in your part of the world were able to watch the match live without having to leave their home because the game is on YouTube. And then on vice versa, that was really the first time I've ever gotten to see an Arsenal ladies play, because you don't get to see any, if many, WSL matches at all. So I think it was a very interesting go about it. The play was good. Both teams definitely up for it. I think Laura Harvey obviously had a, you know, that was a big match for her. The team that she built back in England to the team that she's built from scratch here in the US. But yeah, a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, and I'll certainly do my best to try and catch up with it when I get some time over the course of this week. And for those that didn't see it, it finished 1-1. It was a goal from Bev Yanez for Seattle that gave them the lead, and then it was a penalty from Natalia that levelled it up. It was worth mentioning that we send our best wishes to Leah Williamson. She was injured in the fourth minute, stretchered off a few minutes after that. I know she's got to have an MRI scan. Did have a little word with Pedro Losa after a few days after the game, and he said there was no update in terms of her injury, which I'm sure we'll hear something over the coming days. But yeah, I think you're right. I think one of the key things that comes out of it is we don't even get to see WSL games streamed online. You can, if you're a subscriber to the channel that shows WSL, they have an app that allows you to watch it online, but you have to subscribe to that channel. So if you don't subscribe to it, you don't get to see it. Like you say, this game was available to everyone, and I think that's really important. It gave you guys in the US, as much as anything, like you said, an opportunity to see what the English game is made up of and is about and what it's made up of. You got to see the likes of Jordan Nobbs and Casey Stoney and whoever else was playing in that game. You got to see them and see what they were about and the style of play that they have.
Yeah, and I think Casey Stoney actually did not feature in that match. She was one of a few players that was left behind. And actually, one of the other players that was left behind, and I'm pretty sure a lot of Americans were upset, though I know that she had prior obligations.
Kelly Smith.
Very disappointed. Just purely because, hey, I want to see Kelly Smith play. It was a little sad when I looked down up the team sheet. I'm like, Smith, no. Oh, right. She didn't fly. Though, again, fair credit to Alex Scott. Showed up, I think, maybe 36 hours before kickoff. Probably a bit jet lag, but she actually had to come in for Leah and play 85 minutes, which is impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. True pro, Alex Scott. And I do wonder, I haven't spoken to Kelly, but I do wonder if maybe the fact that game was on turf made the decision a little bit easier. Obviously, she's, touch wood, managed to stay fit this season so far and obviously played a lot of minutes in the FA Cup final the previous week. I wonder if that maybe had a factor. But yeah, I'm sure it was disappointing for people not to be able to see Kelly, because we don't know how much longer she's going to play for, and that would have been an opportunity for you guys in the States especially to see her maybe for one last time. But we'll leave that game there, mate. We'll move on to the NWSL. Latest round of games have just been completed. As a result of them, Chicago Red Stars find themselves top of the league. Portland Thorns are up there with them, undefeated. What have you made of the most recent games, mate, since we last recorded?
Well, similarly to a mash washed out for Arsenal, we had a near swimming pool in Houston this past week. Didn't able to see Houston and Washington battle. Washington, though, benefiting because Chicago drew with Sky Blue. Portland drew with Seattle at home, so not really a lot of change at the top. It's a big logjam between 1 and 5. 5 being Western New York Flash. How about them? They're figuring out a way to not only win, but to score goals. They've scored 9 in the last 2. which is impressive.
They've looked good. They've looked good, and I think they've probably exceeded a lot of people's expectations, certainly mine. Obviously, it's still early days. There's still plenty of games left. But they've done well, and like you say, they're scoring goals. And if you're scoring goals, you're giving yourselves a very good chance of winning matches. I think they've been really impressive in the games I've seen. I haven't seen as much of them as I would like. Obviously, because of the time difference, it's difficult to watch every game. I'm maybe seeing maybe three or four games out of the five every week. And I've seen Western New York a few times, and they've impressed me. I think another team that's exceeding expectations, but now the challenge really begins as internationals start to depart for national team games and obviously soon for the Olympics, is the Orlando Pride. Currently find themselves in the playoff position.
Yeah.
Been impressive, four wins from their seven games, but now the challenge really does start, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You know, they're exposed. They lost 2-0 away to FC Kansas City, albeit one goal off of a free kick, wicked deflection. Though, then again, when you have Yael Averbush hitting a screamer at you, you don't really have much opportunity to get out of a way of one. But FCKC goes and picks up their first victory of the season against Orlando. And you look up and down at that team, that Orlando team still had its Canadian players that were available. So Jose Belanger and Kaylin Kyle were in action. Belanger will now be out of action because she's going to be playing for Canada in their two-game series against Brazil. But yeah, it's depleted. This past weekend was a really early sign of what some teams will look like without their internationals. Portland had to dig down deep to get a draw against Seattle. I felt that Seattle dominated the match in the second half, but very good defensive work was able to keep that at 0-0. Chicago, we saw last year, was a team that rose to the occasion during this time and already they had chances. They should have beaten Sky Blue but didn't, but they had multiple opportunities to score. Washington, I think even with their internationals, should be okay. And you're going to have teams like Seattle and Western New York who will have very minimal loss during pre-Olympic buildup. They're going to be the same team, and they're going to just improve.
And why didn't Chicago Red Stars win yesterday, JJ? Because Leah Galton from England scored the equalizer.
Good for her. I mean, you look at it. Well, she's graduated, time of recording, 9 days ago. Has already gotten a goal and assist and not combined 90 minutes of action. Good for her.
That's absolutely.
How you make a start.
Absolutely. Well, obviously, fellow English striker out there, Rachel Daly, has been recalled to the England squad. She'd had a call up before under Mark Sampson, but I think the call up may have been when she was still playing as a defender. So
potentially, yeah.
Yeah, so she's been recalled. England have two. England have two Euro qualifiers against Serbia coming up this week. So it'll be interesting to see whether Rachel features in any of those games. But we're not talking about England, we're talking about the NWSL. I don't want it to feel like we're picking on them, but you know who I want to talk about next based on that statement, don't you?
Yes, I do.
How do we assess Boston Breakers? They got their first win, which was massively important, at home to FC Kansas City, which was important because they are, at the time, they were the two teams without a win, and then they go and get smashed at Western New York.
Yes. Yes, they did. It's going to be one of those seasons, Karen. I've said this before on numerous conversations and publications. If they get a couple more wins this year, that's going to be a victory for them. Not to be harsh, not to be critical, it's just the point. They have a lot of things there. It's just they don't have the final piece to the puzzle. I think if there's a time for them to make a move, it's going to be during that month of July, where they're only miss Kaya Simon and maybe Whitney Engen. That might be about it. Where other teams may be losing multiple players, but they're going to have those weekends where they'll put it together and they may scratch out a 1-1 draw, a nil-all draw, or 1-0 victory, but then there's going to be those weekends where they're just going to lose 4-0. And you can't, you have to take it all in stride. I think Boston, again, they've accepted that this is going to be the long run. You have to just stay the course, and eventually, if you continue to build the pieces, it's going to get there. I think, you know, they're trying to make some moves. Eunice Beckman coming in is one that I was a little surprised by, but clearly, you know, again, another player that's not going to be tied to the Olympics. So let her get a run out, see how she works with, like, Steph McCaffrey. But it's going to be not this year. It's going to be year 2017 or 2018.
Okay, so, as I say, I don't want to pick on Boston. I do hope, for the sake of Matt Beard being an English coach, that he can get some wins under his belt. Where they come from, I think we both agree, we don't really know. One thing I want to finish up on the NWSL, mate, is Sky Blue. We mentioned them, the good result that they got in Chicago. But I want to talk about Aaron Naylor, the New Zealand goalkeeper that they signed within the last couple of weeks. It looks like she has departed already. She put a tweet out saying how disappointed she was with her first experience of pro soccer, hashtag buy New Jersey. What do we make of that one? Because I haven't been able to, I'm not even sure that there's been any kind of official announcement from the club either.
There has been an official announcement. She has departed. The team re-signed Caroline Casey. And to me, Karen, I'm just going to be again honest. I didn't see that signing coming, period. And let's look at this. The timing wasn't good to begin with. New Zealand qualified for the Olympics. So what is that? She's going to have a month here? Already the team is going to be playing matches against Australia in the international window. So that's another couple of weeks. Because remember, that's a long flight coming from Australia and New Zealand back to the States to then turn around and go back home to then come back to the Western Hemisphere to play in the Olympics. It's a lot of travel for one person to begin with. The Chicago broadcast, or actually, I don't think it was Chicago. It might have been another broadcast, but regardless, there was a broadcast that talked about it where the timing didn't work, and it was one of those things where both clubs are kind of at a standstill. Caroline Stanley has pretty much won that number one position. So, okay, what's Aaron Naylor going to do? She's going to train with the team, maybe get a match or two. That doesn't help her in preparation for Rio, because if you're New Zealand, you'd want your number one goalie to be playing first-team football all the time, up until then, to be sharp going into a major tournament. Now, on the other side, yeah, that's disappointing for her, because she's basically flown across the world into a new country, and it just didn't work. I mean, unfortunately, we see it all around in various sports where things just don't work out, whether it's a personnel thing or just a comfort thing, or, you know, some players just may not like being at a certain place for whatever reason. I don't know what it is over there. Again, the move originally just kind of befuddled me a bit. Hopefully she can find a place to go play, because, you know, again, I think New Zealand is another country where there's a lot of untapped potential, purely because of the fact that you have a lot of those players that are coming now to play college soccer over here. I think big case Hannah Wilkinson, who University of Tennessee product. You have a couple others that are playing professionally. Obviously, Allie Riley, who we all know and love, one of the standout defenders in the Swedish league. There's a lot of players that are there, and you just have to find the right spot for them to be involved with, and if they are, then they're going to make something of it.
Yeah, completely agree. I think very odd move by Sky Blue, and even odder for it to be over within the space of about a week. But we will never really know why, I don't think. You're right. Caroline Casey coming in, being re-signed. Caroline Stanley. I think Caroline Stanley has been impressive given the performances that she's had. I think she will be the number one. And I think she will hopefully have a good career, because I think she's highly rated. Never got the opportunity out in Seattle. Now's a chance for her to really grab one of the spots in an NWSL club. And let's not forget, there's only 10 clubs, which means there's only 10 keeper spots. So the chances are limited. She's now got one. She's now got to take that. And I think she probably will. But I think that's enough on the NWSL, mate. And actually, that's probably enough on this show. I think we've run for long enough. Plenty to cover. And we've covered it, hopefully. Probably stuff we haven't covered. But there are other shows if people want to hear random other stuff as well. That's not a problem. We're not the only people out there. But we will finish it up there, mate. Thank you as always for coming on. One thing I did forget to mention, and I should give a shout out to Brighton and Hove Albion's women's team, who played a playoff this past weekend against Sporting Club Albion. Sporting Club Albion are associated with better known West Bromwich Albion, is the men's team in the Premier League. Sporting Club Albion are the women's team. They played against each other this past weekend in a playoff match for a place in the WSL next year. And Brighton won the game 4-2. It was played at Wickham, the home of Wickham Wanderers men's team and also the home of Reading women's team. And they will now be in the Women's Super League 2 next year after their victory. So congratulations
to them. By the way, actually, that one, and this is going to be a weird correlation, that one actually kind of hits home for me a little bit. And here's why. The university I attended, Rider University, one of the best players to ever graduate from that program plays for Sporting Club Albion, Abby Cottam. And unfortunately, I think she had got herself on the score sheet. She played with Aston Villa before and now down there, obviously with them through their run the FA Cup. But that one hurts a little bit because I'm a Ryder Bronc through and through, and I think it's hard for me to see graduating one of the best players ever to come through our women's soccer program to fall short of WSL 2.
Well, we should set an interview up with Abby, but as I say, need to end the show. Thank you very much for coming on and joining me as always, mate. Thank you very much to you, the listeners. Always appreciate your support and appreciate you tuning in. Of course, if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do. We're on at WOSOZone. You can email us on WOSOZone@gmail.com. And of course, to listen to the show, you can either listen through iTunes by searching for Women's Soccer Zone or by going to audioboom.com/channel/WOSOZone. So for now, we will speak to you in a couple of weeks. Take care of yourselves and bye-bye.